Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Monday, August 5th, 2024. I'm Lindsey Crosby, baseball writer for Athlon Sports, joined by Christian Rau, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And Christian, crazy weekend of baseball, lots of games, lots of results. But I think the biggest thing that happened over the weekend, we got to lead off with this. Blake Snell throws a no-hitter. And I think it's memorable because if you think about what's the story of Blake Snell? Everybody knows Blake Snell. He's a dude that's going to run up high pitch counts. He's going to go 5-6 innings. He's going to walk three guys, but he's going to get out of the outing with 7 strikeouts and 2 runs allowed. He had never finished 8 innings in his career. And the first time he throws a complete game, it's a no-hitter. Blanks the Cincinnati Reds on this 3-0 on Friday night. So I think my question to you is this. We saw after winning the Cy Young last year, free agency did not go the way he wanted. He signs for 2 years, $62 million with the Giants, has a player opt-out after this season. Does he exercise that opt-out and re-enter the free agent market this offseason?
Well, first, congratulations to Blake Snell, and welcome back, everyone, to First Pitch. But I'm going to have to say no, Lindsey, and this is why. This is my thought process here. I think teams are starting to figure out, even though this is the first time they've seen Blake Snell go this far in a game, I think they're starting to figure out who Blake Snell really is. And what I mean by that is, if you look at last year's stats, when he won the National League Cy Young, his pre-All-Star, 2.85 ERA, you look at him post-All-Star, 1.54 ERA. We know if you've paid attention to his season last year, we know he was a second half guy. Maybe that's just who he is, especially this season, what he did is signing late, having a couple injuries, dealing with getting to the minor leagues before he had to get up to work himself up before he got over to San Francisco. He's just a second half guy. So I don't think that's going to benefit him in free agency compared to what he already has as a player option. So I think we're going to see him in a Giants uniform next year.
Yeah, I believe it is $30 million if he does not opt out and sticks around. So they get a bit of a discount on him. See, I'm gonna go with the opposite. I'm going to say he probably does opt out, right? Look at, you know, the season stats, like you alluded to, are not great because of the slow start. 1-3, 4.29 ERA. But here's the thing, okay? Second half last year was great, 1.54 ERA. It's even better right now, right? 1-0, 0.55 ERA in his last 5 starts. Now, assuming that he continues that pace, you have to think he can enter free agency. He is no worse than the third best pitcher available, right? And if you argue based on career accolades and awards, he probably is the best, right? Because you've got Blake Snell, you've got Corbin Burns, and you've got Max Fried. Max Fried's never won a Cy Young. No. Obviously, Blake Snell has 2. And so I think that based if he continues this sort of pace, not always throwing no-hitters, but if he continues to be even more dominant, I think he can go into free agency and say, listen, when I had a normal offseason in 23, I was still a pretty good pitcher in the first half and dominant in the second. Even this last year, with the difficulties we had in getting attached, getting on with the team, getting started, getting ramped up for the year, I still turned it on and was dominant in the second half, even more so than usual. And the prices that teams have been paying for pitching at the deadline in free agency last year, it feels like $30 million is something you can get past. The question for me is going to be, can he do it with Scott Boras as his agent? Because I would argue that more so than anything else is what scared some teams off last year. And I know one of Boras's guys, I think it was Jordan Montgomery, one of Boras's guys changed agents after last offseason and how that whole thing went. And so I think maybe, well, one, you feel like Boras is going to make him opt out anyway, but I think if he doesn't have Boras, I think maybe he is able to go out re-enter free agency and find some long-term security, even if maybe it's only meeting that $30 million salary he'd get next season.
You know, that's a good point. And he is going to be entering his age 32 season. He around the winter meetings, he's going to have his birthday. So maybe he doesn't even hit that $30 million year AAV, but maybe he looks for a couple year contract, multi-year contract for really it's going to be his last chance at it this coming free agency. So maybe you're right.
I mean, we say that Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer keep getting $40+ million into their 40s. Yeah. And they are, I believe, so Verlander is going to vest an option. And then Scherzer is just, I think, a free agent after this season if he doesn't pick up his option. And so we could
see. I'm pretty sure Scherzer's getting paid by every team in the MLB right now. So
he still has deferred money from the Nationals he's receiving. So, like, yeah, he's going to be paid by multiple teams at the same time. So let us know if you have thoughts on Blake Snell. Let us know down in the comments. We saw a little bit of speaking of like dominance, we saw the opposite of that from the Chicago White Sox. 13-7 loss to the Minnesota Twins on Sunday, making them the seventh team in modern baseball history, so since 1901, to lose 20 consecutive games. It's the longest streak in baseball since the Baltimore Orioles dropped 21 in 1988, and if I remember right, that's what got Cal Ripken Sr. fired, like pretty early that year, was them losing 21 straight games. Here's my question. The MLB record for consecutive losses is 23 by the Philadelphia Phillies in 1961. The White Sox are going on the road, I believe, to Oakland to play the Athletics for a three-game series. If they get swept in this series, and they tie that record for most consecutive losses ever, does Pedro Grifol get fired as manager of the White Sox?
I mean, you got to think it's inevitable by now. And by the way, if they tie it in Oakland, the chance they can break it, the Chicago Cubs back at home. So that's just a dagger to the heart. I saw people on social media, a couple of my White Sox friends making jokes saying, if Pete Crow Armstrong hits the home run to seal the deal for the 24. It's just wild stuff. But when you look at this, when you look at this record that is most likely going to be broken, if it's not the consecutive streak, it's probably going to be the most losses in the season, which is at 120, which is just bizarre. It's so crazy because what were we talking about? 2020, 2021, this team was one of the top teams in all of the American League. Mm-hmm. We were talking about them being the possible one seed going into the playoffs. Now, they didn't have a great job in the playoffs, but they did a fantastic job in the regular season. How fast they have fell off has been insane. I think we're going to be looking back at this season and laughing more at the fact that they didn't sell all the way because of how bad the season has been. There's a couple of players still on this team that they did not move the trade deadline, Luis Robert Jr. being one of them.
Garrett Crochet, yeah.
Right. 20 losses as a row, as you mentioned. They are 60 games below 500. With Pedro Grifol as their manager now, 88-188. He is 100 games below 500. 100 games as manager. They are 1-12 against the Twins. 1-12.
His winning percentage is under 320. It's the worst in White Sox history for a full-time manager.
I think you got to make the move. I don't think you can hold on to him throughout the season. I don't think you can do that. I don't think there's any value in doing that. There's no way he's going to stay around in the offseason. I think you just go ahead. You bite the bullet now. Maybe you wait till this road trip's over because they're out in the West Coast. Maybe you wait till Oakland's over. And then when they head back to Chicago before they face the Cubs, you make the change. I think that's when you do it.
Yeah. And according to Bob Nightingale of USA Today, there was a meeting between Grifol, owner Jerry Reinsdorf, and GM Chris Getz last Wednesday after they lost to the Royals. And ultimately, obviously, they decided not to fire him. I kind of think that you're on the right path there with if they continue to struggle out west, even if they, if they drop 2 out of 3, that'll be a victory for them because that means they got a victory, right? They avoided the streak. But it feels like when they come home before the Cubs, that's when you go ahead and you pop it, get somebody new in there. And we've seen some things recently, heard some stories about him trying to, I guess, motivate the clubhouse and just it kind of backfiring. There was the reports about him telling the players if they set that that record for consecutive losses, that the players are going to be remembered as the ones who failed. And I'm like, brother, I couldn't tell you a single player on the 1961 Philadelphia Phillies. I just remember the 1961 Philadelphia Phillies were the worst team in, as far as futility in baseball history. So, like, yeah. It's he obviously is not connecting with the clubhouse that well. And it feels like, I think he's a bad man walking. I think you're right. It's just a matter of when. And getting back from the road trip, what if they fired him on the tarmac? Just one of those old college football firings where they fire him right after the game on the tarmac, and he has to fly private. He has to fly public back home.
I think of Herb Edwards from Arizona State a few years back. They fired him right at the goalpost before he even got a chance to walk off the field.
Oh, so I remember that.
That'd be crazy. Do it right at the dugout. Yeah, that could be wild. Yeah. There is a possibility that the Chicago White Sox could be officially eliminated from the playoffs by Saturday. So if they lose out and teams like the Royals
by August 10th,
There's a chance. I don't think I've ever seen a team that early get eliminated by August 10th. There's a chance by this Saturday.
That's wild. All right, going from historic futility to two good teams battling each other, the American League East has a tie at the top right now. The Baltimore Orioles, New York Yankees are both 67-46. I don't know the exact tiebreakers. The MLB.com standings literally just list them as co-division leaders right now. So I don't quite know the tiebreakers. But I think this is really interesting because they only have three more games against each other this season, right? Baltimore leads the season series 6-4, plus 11 run differential. I assume head-to-head's the tiebreaker on this. But Baltimore, 6-4 in the last 10. New York, 7-3 in the last 10. Baltimore's heading to Toronto for a three-game series. Their remaining schedule, strength of schedule, 23rd hardest in baseball, .490 winning percentage. Yankees, home versus the Angels. So two winnable matchups here, right? Remaining schedules, strength of schedule, 27th, .477 in baseball. So, two-part question for you here. One, who wins the AL East? And then, is the loser of the AL East automatically the top seed in the AL wildcard? Whoever it is has a four-game lead in the wildcard right now.
I'll answer that second question first and say yes. I think that the second place team for the AL East will be the top wildcard team in the American League. Now, when you're answering who's going to win this one, I think you could flip a coin. And I think we kind of alluded and had a conversation to this last week in a sense about who we thought. And I said the Orioles. I'm going to stick with the Orioles. I think that the Baltimore Orioles can hold on to this division. I know that they just slipped out and now they're tied, but look who they just brought back up. They brought back up Jackson Holliday, and he did not have a great beginning of the year when he was with them. But now, the number one prospect in baseball is 7-18 since he's got his call back up, .389 since returning back to the show. He's hitting really hard contact. He's looking like the major leaguer that we all expected him to be. It's got to be exciting. And I don't think there's too much concern here, but it's give me a couple caution flags, Lindsay. Garrett Cole missed his last start to body fatigue.
Yeah.
He pitched on Sunday. He hadn't bounced back
from his last outing.
And then he pitched on Sunday, wasn't as dominant in the strikeout section that I would assumed he would be. So there's a little bit of concerns that I have there. I think he'll be fine. Don't get me wrong. Chill out, Yanks fans. I'm not going after Garrett Cole. I just think that there's just a little bit of concern there. So that's why I still am leaning towards the Baltimore Orioles winning the American League East.
I think I've got the Orioles as well, providing that the pitching can hold up, right? The Yankees have more arms, I think, than the Orioles do. As far as the rotation.
And their bullpen pieces are nice, what they added.
Yeah. Burns and Eflin's a decent 1-2 punch. Eflin's not a no-doubt postseason guy. You don't think like he's going to go out and dominate a lineup in the postseason, but it gives you a high floor, right? I do think that the Yankees offense, you just got Giancarlo Stanton back. You just added Jazz Chisholm. But I do think you've still got some questions here. When you look at the full season results, like qualified hitters, so three guys batting over .250, right? Judge and Soto, .322, .310. We know that they're going to be great, right? Anthony Volpe, .261. After that, your only other qualified hitters, Gleyber Torres is batting .235. Alex Verdugo is batting .233. And it feels like right now, Jazz is performing, right? Jazz has helped you in that lineup, but it feels like you're still running the risk of it's a Judge Soto lineup. And if you can get around those guys, it's a lot easier to navigate that lineup than it really should be. Hopefully Giancarlo Stanton is hot when he comes back. Hopefully Jazz can lengthen that. You've got options, whether it's Ben Rice, Austin Wells, guys like that. But it feels like it's not as complete of an offense as it needs to be. And then pitching-wise, I just, given Gerrit Cole's health issues that he's shown this season, I've got more trust in game one that Corbin Burnes is going to beat Gerrit Cole. Like, I have more faith in Burnes than Cole right now. And so, again, provided the Baltimore rotation can hold up, which is always a question with Baltimore,
true,
I feel like they have the edge head-to-head. Because, one, they're up in the series 6-4. And so Yankees essentially have to sweep to get that tiebreaker.
Yeah, the pending free agency of Corbin Burnes, I think, has to be mentioned as well. I think because you are going into a playoff spot and he's your ace, there's no doubt about it. Knowing that he's going to be a free agent and he's going to be set to be making the biggest payday of all starting pitchers, as we mentioned earlier in the show, I think that has something to do with it as well, if he's your game one starter, which if he's healthy, there's no doubt about it. I do find it interesting, talking about free agency real quick before you transition over, that the Orioles moved that wall back and the park factor did not change much. I do find that interesting. I was looking at that last night. Park factor for the Orioles park moved from only 103 to 101. Interesting.
It was never a great homer park for righties anyway. But after that, I feel like that's specifically where it hurts. And which means some of the decisions don't make a lot of sense. And obviously it kind of messed up with Cedric Mullins. Drafting Vance Honeycutt was an odd choice to me because what is he? He's a righty extreme pull hitter. And I'm like, well, now he's hitting towards Baltimore. So we'll see what happens. Okay, quick pitch. Quick hits here from the weekend. Spencer Schwellenbach of the Atlanta Braves made some history, right? 3 runs on 6 hits in 7 innings, struck out 10, didn't walk a batter. Here's some of the history here now. He's the first pitcher in franchise history with a 5-start stretch of 38 or more strikeouts and 1 or no walks. And that's only been done 3 times by an age 24 or younger pitcher in the wildcard era. Noah Syndergaard in 2016 for the Mets, Julio Urias in 2021 by the Dodgers. Okay. Seeing how he's burst on the scene this year from AA too, how do you feel about the future of the Braves rotation?
Yeah, interesting, right, with this Braves rotation. I'll add even one more to that history thing since that last start. It was his back-to-back 10 strikeout games. He had 70 strikeouts in less than 10 walks in his first 11 starts. That's the first time in modern history of MLB that that's happened. I like what Schwellenbach's done. I like what he's persevered to do. He started off his start giving up 2 home runs, and then he finished it with 10 strikeouts. So really like what he's done. But when you look at this Braves rotation, I think the first thing you have to look at is what's going to happen with Max Fried. He just had a rough start on Sunday, pending free agent. Do they have the money to take care of him, especially with that trade for Jorge Soler? I don't know, man. But when you look at it, you got a lot of young people coming up. You have AJS, you have Schwellenbach, you have Waldrop. There's a lot of things you can add to that piece. It makes you wonder if Max Fried is going to be a Brave in 2025.
Yeah, a lot of the sentiment around the fan base is that you're not going to re-sign him. And I think if you want to, you can. Charlie Morton's $20 million is off the books. I could see you could find the money for him. Atlanta's just never signed a guy under Alex Anthopoulos to make more than $22 million in a year. And the question is, how much over that would you have to go to sign Max Fried? Okay, prospect of the weekend. If you watched my old Locked On MLB Prospect show, you know that I had a low opinion of the pitching development of the University of Florida. They sent another pitcher to MLB. The Mets grabbed him. They have multiple Florida pitchers. Brandon Sproat goes for Binghamton on, I think it was on Friday in double A, struck out 11 batters in a row on his way to a 13 strikeout outing, 21 swings and misses in the game, 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, 13 strikeouts. Is Brandon Sproat part of the major league rotation in 2025?
I think so, yes. And I think that they just made that first step doing so this weekend. After that amazing start he had, he finished his AA with a 2.45 ERA, 77 strikeouts across only 62 innings. They go ahead and give him the bump to AAA Syracuse. So I think they're setting him up for a nice transition to battle in spring training to get himself in the rotation. But if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, I'm going to go with saying Brandon Sproat, MLB starter in 2025.
I think he's kind of broken through the ceiling that we perceived he had. We saw him as like a number four, number five. He was a heavy fastball slider guy, added the curveball, got a changeup, run it up in the high 80s. And I think the thing here was a lot of the assumption was back of the rotation guy. And we've seen now he can get the whiffs. He can get the swing and miss. I like the idea of there's so many free agents at the major league level, right? Sean Manea, I believe, is a free agent. Quintana, Severino, all these guys. Kodai Senga, Christian Scott, Brandon Sproat is a good core to build a rotation around. Obviously, they'll be active in free agency. Steve Cohen has money that's burning the hole in his pocket, but I like that grouping they have there. Okay, something fun here. Best blank. We're going to do a ranking here. In this case, best bullpen in baseball. Since I'm throwing this on you, I'll go first. I like the San Diego Padres. They spent a lot of prospects to do it, right? They gave up a lot of prospects at the deadline, but they already had Jeremiah Estrada, Robert Suarez, who I think were both really good. They added lefty Tanner Scott from the Miami Marlins, who was probably the best lefty reliever available on the market. They added Jason Adams from the Tampa Bay Rays. And so to me, a team that has questions in the rotation, Yu Darvish may or may not be back this year. Matt Waldron, the knuckleballer, showed a little bit of shakiness in his most recent starts. It's like Dylan Cease in a prayer. I think now all you have to do is ask a dude to get through five innings because you've got four studs, including both righties and lefties, who you can trust to go out there and be filthy for an inning on 13 pitches, get through, you know, and close out a game. So I've got the San Diego Padres as probably the bullpen I want to face the least in the postseason.
I'm going to go the opposite direction here and probably go with names you haven't heard much of. But when you look at the numbers, they're the best bullpen in baseball and have been for quite some time this season, and that's the Cleveland Guardians. When you look at Emmanuel Clase, you look at Hunter Gaddis, Cade Smith, Tim Herron, the regular baseball fan probably hasn't heard half of those names. Mm-hmm. But all those relief pitchers, Lindsay, under a 2 ERA, and they've all had at least 50 appearances this season. Clase, 33 for 36 on save opportunities. All of those guys are helping Cleveland stay in the AL Central fight, and I think they're the main reason we will see them in the postseason this October with, honestly, they'll probably be one of the biggest surprises by making it there because I didn't have Cleveland as a playoff team this year.
I didn't think the power would improve in Cleveland. Some of the ballpark changes helped that. But then even with their rotation instability they've had, boom, you get through five or so innings, you get to that bullpen, same situation, it's practically over. So I think it's a good group as well. Wrapping up here, best game, small slate of games today, right? Best game to watch tonight, Aaron Nola, Tyler Glasnow, Phillies at Dodgers. Math in my head, 10:10 p.m. Eastern, 7:10 p.m. Pacific. Going to be a great matchup. Two teams who are leading their division right now. Two teams who are also, it feels like, slumping a little bit after the All-Star break. Phillies still have not won a series. L.A.'s had some shaky results. Let's see what happens when two division leaders face off tonight. Anything else for us, Christian?
I'm just excited to watch baseball this week. We're in the thick of it again. Now we are in the middle of the month of August. We're getting there. We are the magic number for baseball for playoffs. We are less than 50 games until the playoffs. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things to be excited about, not just that Dodgers-Philly season or series. There's just a lot of things to get going. I'm looking forward to it. Not happy that the Cardinals lost a series to the Cubs. I'll throw that out there. Okay, there's my rant, but a lot of fun things, and I'm looking forward to talking baseball with you this week.
I'm in that same boat. Braves had a chance to take a series against the Marlins, won the first two, dropped the last two for a series split. Could have gained some ground on Philly there, but they're still five or six games back. They've improved that from almost 10. So excited to see what happens this week. They're off today before they face Milwaukee. I'm Lindsey Crosby. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter, Christian S. Rau on Twitter. I'm at Crosby Baseball. Do us a favor. If you're watching on YouTube, like the video, subscribe to the channel. If you're on audio, leave us a 5-star review. It absolutely helps a ton. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.